They say everyone has a book inside them, and often that's where it should stay. I really can't help but be aghast that the author wants you to pay. But we're just a pair of absolute bookends, you don't want to be like us. So if you want to read, pick some quality literature, rather than this dross.
Hello, welcome to Two Absolute Bookends, where we read books so bad you should burn them before reading. This is episode 12. Title, again pending, and staring up at the piercing stare of the ambivalent idol with me is Louis.
Hello.
And this week, we're going to be reading from Chapter 3 of The Eye of Argon by Jim Tess. Again, you can't support the author, because he dared, but you should read the book anyway. So, just in case you've forgotten, this is a little bit different. Because of we don't have to worry about copyright and it's a really short book, we're going to be reading The Eye of Argon in its entirety, making comments as we go with a little bit of a roundup at the end of each chapter. So, we're going to be starting with Chapter 3 this week, and I believe that you're starting us off, Louis?
Yep, I don't know if it's worth just covering where we left off briefly.
Oh yeah, that can't hurt.
So I think our main character, Grigna, the barbarian, basically got into a bit of a disagreement in a tavern and got put in front of the prince.
And he beheaded a guy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's another way of saying he got in a bit of trouble. And then basically badmouthed the prince, and the prince didn't like that, so he's sent him away to, like, a prison or something like that.
A little bit like that. So he was sentencing him to go and mellow in the Stygian caverns before he was going to be sent to work for the rest of his life. And Grigna didn't like that, so he made a wild beeline, stole a sword from a guard, ran through the king's counsellor, Agafind, with a sword, but then got taken down by the guards while he was gloating over the fat rippling prince. But it seems like the plan's going ahead with his fate anyway, though.
Yep, and Chapter 2 ended with Grigna being knocked unconscious, so that's where we'll pick up.
Yeah, and just say, for some reason, Chapter 3 is split into two halves. Three and three and a half. I don't know why, but that's how it's been recorded for posterity.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we're going with.
Yep. So, Chapter 3. Consciousness returned to Grigna in stigmatic pools, as his mind gradually cleared of cobwebs cluttering its inner recesses. The Stygian cloud of charcoal ebony remained, an incompatible shield of blackness enhanced by the bleak absence of sound. Grigna's muddled brain reeled from the shock of the blow he had received to the base of his skull. The events leading to his predicament were slow to filter back to him. He dickered with the notion that he was dead, and had descended or sunk, however it may be, to the shadowed land beyond the aperture of the grave, but rejected this hypothesis when his memory sifted back within his grips. This was not the land of the dead. It was something infinitely more precarious than anything the grave could offer. Death promised an infinity of peace, not the finite misery of an inactive life of confined torture, forever concealed from the life-bearing shafts of the beloved rising sun. The orb that had been before taken for granted, yet now cherished above all else. Is he referring to the sun, though?
I believe so. That beloved orb.
Right. To be forever refused further glimpses of the snow-capped summits of the land of his birth, never again to witness the thrill of plundering unexplored lands beyond the crest of a bleeding horizon, and perhaps worst of all, the denial to ever again encompass the lustful excitement of caressing the naked curves of the body of a trim, yawned wench.
They make love so well, though, Louis.
Those yawned wenches.
Like, is that a place? Is that a city? Does he like the yawned wenches?
I love how that's the, like, after all that, you know, waxing lyrical, then it's like, oh yeah, but those wenches.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it's really about.
I was going to say, he doesn't seem to be considering suicide here or anything. He's like, oh man, death, it's so final, I'd get peace, or I can live in servitude and darkness forever. That sucks. And there's nothing I can do about it.
Yeah.
Just going to be sitting here thinking of lustful orbs, snowy peaks and yound wenches for the rest of my existence.
Trim yound wenches.
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean by trim? Like, thin?
Yeah.
How come they have naked curves? I'm not going to body shame. Like, curves of a trim yound wench. I guess. Depends how trim and how yound.
Yeah, there are too many variables here. Yeah. You know, we're overthinking this.
Okay. This was indeed one of the buried chasms of hell concealed... What? I thought you said it wasn't. Hang on. This was indeed one of the buried chasms of hell concealed within the inner depths of the palace's despised interior.
Yeah, this is like not a literal hell. This is a figurative hell.
Right.
That's what's going on here. A fearful... Though he did capitalise hell, so I'm a little unsure.
Yeah. A fearful ebony chamber devised to drive to the brinks of insanity the minds of the unfortunately condemned through the inapt solitude of a limbo of listless, dreary silence. Almost did it.
Close enough.
Yeah. That's three. That's chapter three.
That's chapter three, the first half.
Yep.
So I guess I'm up. 3.5. A tightly rung elliptical circle of torches cast their wavering shafts prancing morbidly over the smooth surface of a rectangular, ridged altar. Expertly chiselled forms of grotesque gargoyles graced the oblique rim protuberating the length of the grim orifice of death, staring forever ahead into nothingness in complete ignorance of the bloody rites enacted in their presence.
What the hell does that sentence mean?
I don't know. That was so long and weird.
Basically, there are gargoyles and they're spooky.
Yeah, wait. So there's an altar with gargoyles on it.
Yes.
And that's what those two sentences meant. I think that's all they were saying. Okay. Brown flaking stains decorated the golden surface of the ridge surrounding the altar, which banked to a small slit at the lower right-hand corner of the altar.
In the previous sentence, it was A-L-T-E-R, and now it's A-L-T-A-R.
Oh, yeah. In this context, the E-R one was a typo. And also, he's using a lot of slits in these sentences right here.
Yeah.
The slit stood above a crudely pounded pail which had several silver meshed chalices hanging at its sides. Dangling
like
at the rim off golden
mallet.
It's
like a tongue twister. Silver mesh chalices. Oh, several silver mesh challenges.
Chalices.
Several silver mesh chalices.
Now, say it 20 times quickly. Don't, please.
Several.
We have a book to read.
I can do it. Several silver mesh. I can't do it.
You can't do it. Stop it. You're making a fool of yourself. Dangling at the rim off golden mallet, the handle of which was engraved with images of twisted faces and groved at its far end with slots designed for a snug hand grip. Grooved.
Yeah.
Right. I like they were thinking about, you know, the orthopedics of this mallet. That's nice. That's good. Good job, cultists. The head of the mallet was slightly larger than a clenched fist and shaped into a smooth oval mass. Encircling the marble altar was a congregation of leering shaman. Misspelt. Eerie chants of a bygone age, originating unknown eons before the memory of man, were being uttered from the buried recesses of the acolyte's deep lings. Ling so deep. Orange paint was smeared in generous globules over the tops of Thua priests' wrinkled shaven scalps, while golden rings projected from the lobes of their pink ears. Ornate robes of lustre purple satin enclosed their bulging torsos, attached around their waist with silvered silk lashes latched with ebony buckles in the shape of morose, misshaped skulls. Dangling around their necks were oval-fashioned medallions held by thin gold chains. Featuring in their centres, blood-red rubies, which resembled crimson fetish eyeballs. What? What's a fetish eyeball?
I don't know.
I feel like one of those times I get lost in that weird side of the internet. The fuck is a fetish eyeball?
A fetish, I've just looked it up. Obviously, we all know what a fetish can be, but also we must be uninitiated because it's an inanimate object worshipped for its supposed magical powers or because it is considered to be inhabited by a spirit.
That use of it seems to have moved slightly into the archaic, but interesting. I'll give you that one, Jim. That, while funny in the 2000s and teens, maybe that was less retarded in the 1970s. I suppose some parts of this book have to be. Cushioning their bare feet were plush red felt slippers with pointed golden spikes projecting from their tips. Like, actual golden spikes. You know, not just like those pointy kind of Turkish-style slippers that are just like that. Actual spikes. Why?
What if you want to kick someone?
These are like plush red felt slippers. They're just like, ooh, comfy slippers with metal spikes in the end of them. It's mad. Situated in front of the altar and directly adjacent to the copper pail was a massive jade idol. A misshaped, hideous bust of the shaman's pagan deity. The shimmering green idol was placed in a sitting posture on an ornately carved golden throne raised upon a round, duvery-plated dais, its bulging arms and webbed hands resting on the padded arms of the seat. Its head was entwined in golden snake-like coils hanging over its oblong ears, which tapered off to thin hollow points. Its nose was a bulging triangular mass, sunken in its sides with towel-gaping nostrils. Dramatic beneath the nostrils was a twisted, shaggy-lipped mouth, giving the impression of a slobbering, sadistic grimace. Man, I'm just trying to actually picture that idol after all of those descriptions.
Mm. I've noticed that everyone seems to be bulging in some way. Like, he has bulging arms and a bulging nose. I think earlier on, the shaman, or...
Yeah, they had bulging middles.
Yeah.
And the prince, whew, we know about how much he was bulging. Yeah, it seems that in this town, the peeps be bulging, yo.
Except the wenches.
Yeah, the wenches has a litheness. It helps them make love well. It's a shaggy-lipped mouth. Does that mean it's, like, mustachioed?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that must be it. As opposed to just, like, hairy lips. Like, yeah. Actual hairy lips. Be like a fucking whale with baleen. But yeah, cool. At the foot of the heathen deity, a slender, pale-faced female, naked but for a golden jewelled harness enshrouding her huge outcropping breasts, supporting long silver laces which extended to her thigh, stood before the pearl-white field with noticeable shivers travelling up and down the length of her exquisitely moulded body. Her delicate lips trembled beneath soft narrow hands as she attempted to conceal herself from the piercing stare of the ambivalent idol.
Oh, so this is... Wait, is this a... I thought this... When this started, I thought it was part of the statue, but is it actually a person?
No.
Or is it part of the statue?
I'm confused. What are you talking about?
Like, why... How... So is this woman being described, like, part of the... Is there a statue, or am I making this up?
No, the idol's a statue.
Yeah. So...
And she's a woman standing in front of the statue.
Oh, I thought it was like part of it, you know? Like it was an intricate scene.
Yeah, just intricate carved scene.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. The exquisitely moulded body made me think it was, you know.
I think you've let his poetic license befuddle you, Louis.
Yeah, and then I started wondering, how can the lips be trembling? That's some, like, sculpture.
Yeah, that's damn realistic. Glaring down towards her was the stony, cycloptic face of the bloated deity. Gaping from its single obling socket was scintillating, many-faceted scarlet emerald, a brilliant gem seeming to possess a life all of its own, a priceless gleaming stone, capable of domineering the wealth of conquering empires. The Eye of Argon. Title drop. End of chapter 3. So, yeah. So what actually happened in chapter 3?
I feel like those were very... That was very challenging to read. They were very, adjective-y.
Yeah.
A lot of and descriptions.
Very descriptive. Often too descriptive, like when, you know, it took him two sentences for him to say that there was an altar.
Yeah, I mean, so Grignr, I guess, like, stumbled upon these shamans, or they approached him?
I think he stumbled across them.
Right.
Yeah, I think. Yeah, I'm trying to get an idea on that. Because that's confusing in the first half of chapter 3. He just wakes up, he's like, I'm in darkness, I can't see anything, what's going on? Then I think at the end it's saying that he sort of like sees this chamber and goes towards it, but it's not very clear.
Yeah, maybe I think there might be separate scenes, you know?
Maybe.
Because it's never mentioned that...
Yeah, like nothing mentions Grignr at all in chapter
And maybe
three
that's
and
why
half.
It's split in half, so it's like two separate scenes, but in the same...
Maybe. I got the impression that Grignr was meant to be like beholding this scene, like from afar, just like he was looking and he was like, all these people... Lithe Maiden, Eye of Argon, Indifferent Idol.
I guess we'll...
Taking of the scene. I mean, yeah, I guess we'll find out. Yeah, it's not very clear what happens to join up chapter 3 and 3.5. I'm not sure quite what's going on. So, the prince, does he know this is happening in the caverns underneath his palace?
Well... I mean, it appears... I mean, he sent him down to, like, a prison, I would assume, type thing. You know, like a sort of... Well, it's not a nice place.
Yeah, he's like, send him down to the caverns to mellow him, or something weird like that.
So, I mean, either these shamans are... They've, like, developed over time of people being stuck down there, or it's some sort of... I don't know.
But the thing is, the prince planned to, like, reclaim Grignr to put him to work after a few days, though. Like, I don't know if it would be that easy if there was, like, a society of shaman living under there, doing their own thing.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we'll just have to read on.
Yeah, I guess so, but it's like, because it's saying that they've got this, like, if Grignr is beholding the scene... Then this must be like right next to where he was like chucked down into the caverns. But even if not, it's like talking about this the Eye of Argon being like, oh, it's like the richest stone in the entire empire. Why is it just in these caverns underneath his palace?
Yeah.
With like this little party of shemen.
Yeah, but they'll kick you with their spiked slippers.
Yeah, just they are like way over accessorizing. Just their whole look is way too busy. But yeah, just I just don't understand why there's a little society of shaman like in his prisoner pit. Basically, that's just super weird to me. Like I say, I guess we'll find out what's going on. Got anything else to say about chapter 3?
No, I'm just intrigued, as you are, to see where it goes.
Yeah, find out what the hell's going on in these caverns.
So, chapter 4. All knowledge of measuring time had escaped Grignr. When a person is deprived of the sun, moon, and stars, he loses all conception of time, as he had previously understood it. It seemed as if years had passed if time were being measured by terms of misery and mental anguish, yet he estimated that his stay had only been a few days in length. He has slept 3 times and has been fed 5 times since his awakening in the crypt. However, when the actions of the body were restricted, its needs are also affected. The need for nourishment and slumber are directly proportional to the functions the body has performed, meaning that when free and active, Grigna may become hungry every 6 hours and witness the desire for sleep every 15 hours, whereas in his present condition he may encounter the need for food every 10 hours and the want for rest every 20 hours.
Why was it telling us this?
I don't know. So much detail.
Why have we suddenly gone from, like, barbarian adventures to, like, Krigna's eating schedule? Modelling an active versus a sedentary Grigna.
So he becomes hungry every 6 hours, and he wants to sleep every 15 when he's active. But now, he's not hungry very much. And he wants to rest every 20 hours.
Yeah.
I like that.
We've learned a lot about Grigna today.
Yeah. Didn't really need to know that. All methods he had depended upon were extinct in the dismal pit. Hence, he may have been in prison for 10 minutes or 10 years. Really?
I think we can definitely rule out both of those numbers.
Yeah.
Like, some greyness I'll accept, but I'd put money on both of them being wrong.
Yeah. He did not know, resulting in a disheartened emotion deep within his being. Have I been here for 10 minutes or 10 years?
They've got him feeling emotions. He's never felt this emotion before. He doesn't even know what to call it. He just knows he can feel it deep within his being.
The food, if you can honour the mouldering lumps of fetid mush to that extent, was born to him by...
Wrong type of born. And it'd be a weird way to put it even if he'd used the right type of born.
Yep. Was born to him by 2 guards who opened a portal at the top of his enclosure and shoved it to him in wooden bowls, retrieving the food and water bowls from his previous meal at the same time.
Like, now, is he like getting his drinks in like pig bladders or something? Is that what he's going for here?
And I'm guessing
that was intentional.
I'm guessing the portal in this like instance is not a magical portal.
I don't think
we
so.
Haven't
I
had
think
any
he just
evidence
means
of magic
like...
yet.
Yeah. I think this is just meant to be like some aperture at the top of wherever he's in.
Mm-hmm. The bowels from his previous meal at the same time, after which they threw back the bolts on the iron latch and returned to their other duties. There you go, not a portal. Iron door.
Mundane.
Yeah. Since deprived of all other means of nourishment, Grigna was impelled to eat the tainted slop in order to ward off the pains of starvation.
Still a weird word to use in that sentence.
Yeah.
Like, compelled would have been better.
I like how he just talks about only needing to be hungry less than before, and now he's like, oh, I'm starving.
Yeah, once every 10 hours.
Yeah. Though as he stuffed it into his mouth with his filthy fingers and struggled to force it down his throat, he imagined it was that which had been spurned by the hounds stationed at various segments of the palace. What? He imagined it was that which had been spurned by the hounds.
So, yeah, he's thinking that this is basically stuff that they wouldn't even feed the dogs.
Oh, I see.
In, like, the most ridiculous roundabout and purple prose, but yeah.
Has it ever been described as a palace before? Because now it's been, like, a chateau...
Maybe.
Yeah.
I lose track. It was Seraglio.
Yeah, that's it.
I think they probably called it a palace at some point too. Like, I think that's probably the most accurate one of all the things it's been called.
I mean, I think, what was it, a Seraglio?
Yeah.
Is that basically a palace? What is it again?
It was like the women's quarter of like an Ottoman palace, basically.
Okay.
So we may be making too much of that. Maybe we just walk past the palace's seraglio on the way there.
Mm-hmm.
But it, like most things in this book, it wasn't very clear.
Yeah, why would the prince's like throne be in the seraglio?
Because all them bitches, Louis.
Oh, yeah, true.
You saw him in there with two naked hoes at his side.
Yep.
And his friend in behind him.
Oh, dear. Okay. There was little in the barren vault that could occupy his mind or body. He had paced out the length and width of the enclosure time and time again, and tested every granite slab which consisted the walls of the prisons in hopes of finding a hidden passage to freedom. All of which was to no avail, other than to keep him busy and distract his mind from wandering to thoughts of what he believed was his future. That is some sentence.
Mm-hmm.
He had memorized the number of strides from one end to the other of his cell, and knew the exact number of slabs which made up the bleak dungeon. Numerous schemes were introduced and alternately discarded in turn as they suckered to unravel to him no means of escape which stood the slightest chances of success.
So
he's referring there in like a collective, like he's saying as they, or is he talking about his schemes? Like, is there multiple people down here? Or is he coming up with these schemes?
It's just him coming up with these schemes,
right.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think...
suckered to unravel to him.
Yeah. That's... So I'm guessing it's quite clear that he's not witnessing the shaman.
Yeah, that's quite clear now. That clearly was just like entire cutaway to separate scene. For some reason I'm not clear on, like, it's going to come up, but clearly. But it seems weird that we just cut away from Grignr in a cell to, also, there's this room elsewhere, somewhere, with shaman in it, and the Eye of Argon. We'll get back to them later.
Well,
to Grignr in his dungeon.
I mean, it probably is, but we don't know that it's down here, like those shamans. But it probably is.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it could be anywhere. We haven't, like, without it being Grignr looking on, we have no idea how that connects to the rest of the plot at all at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
We have no idea.
Anguish continued to mount as his means of occupation were rapidly exhausted. Suddenly, without no tithe, he was rooted, one word, from his contemplations as he detected a faint scratching sound at the end of the crypt opposite him. The sound seemed to be caused by something trying to scrape away at the granite blocks the floor of the enclosure consisted of, the sandy scratching of something like an animal's claws.
What's he trying to say when he says suddenly without no tithe?
Is tithe a word?
Not that I'm aware of.
No, it's not.
What's that even trying to say?
Without... no idea.
I know, I'm just trying to think what it's trying
like, it's
to
not
possibly
time
say.
Time without no... no, don't know.
I'm just drawing a blank on what he could possibly be trying to say at that part. Like, I get that he was routed from his contemplations and stuff. That's all fine. Well, as fine as it gets from there on out. The typos notwithstanding. But what's... I mean, I feel like he's trying to... He would be trying to say something on the lines of, like, suddenly, like...
Oh, I know what it is. I've got it.
What?
I think it's... because it's suddenly without no tithe. I think it's suddenly without notice. Because if you think about it, C is right next to V, if this was done on a typewriter.
And I
think,
could see that.
I think no and tithe is supposed to be one word, and I think it's supposed to be notice. Without notice, maybe?
That sounds like a sentence he would write. Like, it's still fucked up, but it also kind of makes sense, yeah. I guess. I think that's what we're going to be going with. I'll accept that.
Great. Okay. Grignr gradually groped his
alliteration!
Way... Yeah. Grignr gradually groped his way to the other end of the vault, carefully feeling his way along with his hands ahead of him. When a few inches from the wall, a loud, penetrating squeal and the scampering of small padded feet reverberated from the walls of the roughly hewn chamber. Grignr threw his hands up to shield his face and flung himself backwards upon his buttocks. A fuzzy form bounded to his hairy chest. Why do we need to, like...
Wait, so which one's the fuzzy form, Grignr or the rat?
Nice. How do you know it's a rat?
I've spoilt parts of the book to myself.
Spoilers. Burying its talons in his flesh while gnashing towards his throat with its grinding white teeth. At least it's got, like, good dental hygiene.
Yeah, man. Who knew? Who knew rats were so up on flossing?
Yeah. Its sour, fetid breath scorching the squirming barbarian's dilating nostrils. Squirming.
Why is he dilating his nostrils?
To get that fetid breath in.
Yeah, that means he's going to be able to smell better. He's like, this thing stinks. Let's get a really good sniff of it. Silly Grignr.
Grignr grappled with the lashing flexor muscles. this rat is hench.
Damn, sir.
How is it? Is it a rat? Because
it is.
How is it overpowering him?
It's a big rat. They
I guess
big.
So. Like, yeah.
I like to imagine it's like a normal-sized rat.
Yeah,
it's doing this to him. Get it off me! Get it off!
This absolutely massive barbarian.
Like a tiny pet rat.
I hope they become best friends after this. And there's like a spin-off. Now that's a great idea for a book. Grignr
and Ratty.
And this rat that we haven't even really officially defined as being a rat yet.
I mean, it's literally tells you part coming of a sentence now, that, you got stuck in, you know.
Grignr.
I like that you stopped words before it says it's a rat. Go, wait, is this a rat? This is important.
Yeah. Get to the point, Tim. Grignr grappled with the lashing flexor muscles of the repugnant body of a gargantuan brown-hided rat. Okay, so it is big.
Yeah, it's...
I like my image of a small rat.
Yeah, just, you know, it's overcoming Grignr with its speed and litheness, like that wench.
Yeah.
Maybe Grignr's got it all wrong. He's just trying to make love to him well. But Grignr's taking it totally the wrong way.
striving to hold its razor teeth from his juicy jugular as its beady grey organs of sight glazed into the flaring emeralds of its prey.
What?
That's the best description of eyes ever.
That's
organs
yeah.
of sight. I mean, accurate.
Yeah, I mean, not wrong. But I like this. Just and the flaring emeralds of a Grignr's eyes. That's just like such different eye descriptions in the same sentence.
Yeah, you don't want to be, you know. You got to like mix it up,
and you don't mix up eye descriptions much more than beady grey organs of sight, do you? And glazed, what? They glazed into Grignr's eyes.
Yeah, he was
I
like
think that's meant to be gazed.
Yeah, or he I'm was guessing. Like glazing over.
Yeah, just the rat, its mind was like really elsewhere in this life or death struggle.
He suddenly had like an existential crisis, like, what am I doing in my life? Why am I grappling with this guy?
Why am I trying to make love good with this barbarian? He's not into it. Get a grip of yourself, Ratty.
I've made a huge mistake. Taking hold of the rodent around its lean, growling stomach, finally something that's not bulging.
Yeah.
I guess it shares something with the wench. They both want to make love to Grigner and Aline. Taking hold of the rodent around its lean, growling stomach with both hands, Grigner pried it from his crimson rent breast.
Problem?
Removing small patches of flayed flesh from his chest in the motion between the squalid black claws of the starving beast.
He does like squalid as a descriptor.
Yeah.
Often in the weirdest places as well.
Yeah, squalid claws. Holding the rodent at arm's length, he cupped his right hand over over its frothing face, contracting his fingers into vice-like fist over the quivering head. That sounds, yeah. He's putting his fingers into a fist over the quivering head. Anyway,
so he's basically just saying he's trying to crush the rat's hand in his fist.
Yeah.
That's what's happening.
His vice-like fist.
So vice.
Retaining his grip his grips on the rat, Grigner, uncapitalized.
I mean, I guess that's true, because he's gripping the rat's, like, neck or body with one hand, and now he's gripping his head. So he does have multiple grips.
Yeah, true.
I like that. Well done, Jim. Rest well.
Grigner flexed his outstretched arms while slowly twisting his right hand clockwise and his left hand counterclockwise motion. The rodent let out a tortured squall, drawing scarlet as it violently dug its foam-flecked fangs into the barbarian's sweating palm, causing his face to contort to an ugly grimace as he cursed beneath his breath. Wait, so the rat was swearing?
I don't think so. I think it's still Grigner.
Nice. So he basically, like, snapped it in half?
It's still snapping, because the rat's still not happy about it and biting Grigner in his hands.
So this rat can't be that big. Like, it's probably, like, big enough to, like, for, like, his torso, but...
Oh yeah, it's like one of those creepy big like sewer rats.
Yeah, you know those.
Yeah, we've all been there. We've all been spelunky in the sewers. Dangerous times.
Taking hold of the rodent around its I've done that bit.
You loved it so much you wanted to read it again.
Yeah.
See if it made more sense the second time.
With a loud crack, the rodent's head parted from its squirming torso, sending out a sprinkling shower of crimson gore, and trailing a slimy string of disjointed vertebrae, snapped trachea, esophagus, and jugular, disjointed hyoid bone, morose purple stretched hide, and blood-seared muscles.
What? Has he ripped half of the rat outside of its own skin through the neck? Is that what he's done?
Yeah.
And also, did he just, like, take out a book from the library of, like, just anatomy and just, like, just to work out exactly what parts would be ripped out? Like, that's yeah. Just such over-described gore.
But I like it.
I like that it just degenerates into a list. And, like, a really weirdly set out one, which, like, halfway through it has an and, like, esophagus and jugular, then back to the list, disjointed hyoid bone, morose purple stretched hide. What does that mean, morose purple purpled stretched hide? What is that?
Yeah.
I don't know. But it's dead now.
It sure is.
He made love poorly.
Yeah. Flinging the broken body to the floor, Grigner shook his blood-streaked hands and wiped them against his thigh until dry, then wiped the blood that had showered his face and from his eyes. Again sitting himself upon the jagged floor, he prepared to once more revamp his glum meditations.
Fantastic.
He's over it so quickly.
Yes. Yeah, that's... Has this been, like, happening to him every day so far? Is this not even an occurrence anymore?
Yeah.
You know, he wakes up to kill his 5 o'clock rats. But, like, what kind of a dungeon is this actually in? Because, like, at various points he's, like, mentioned it being, like, paved and, like, having sort of, like, blocks building it around the edges. And at other points it's just, like, jagged floor, rough-hewn chamber. It's like half the time it's just, like, a hole in the wall, and the other half it's, like, a properly made, like, cell. It keeps changing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it certainly does. I mean, I think the original description I remember is that it was like a completely walled off thing with a single door that they chuck food in. But yeah, I guess I like to think the rat was there the whole time. It was just like waiting for the right moment.
It still fucked it up.
Yeah.
like did
that's
the rat
why it glazed, its eyes glazed over. As soon as it did it, it was like,
it's just like, oh, I am become error. Mistakes were made, Grigner. Do you want to go back to sleep?
Redo.
Like, what was that rat thinking? Like, this guy is massive. How did he think he was going to come out of this, like, a winner?
Yeah, all he had to do was wait until he, like, I don't know, rotted away.
Well, the guys are feeding him, so it could take a while for him to die of natural causes.
I guess so.
I guess he... But the thing is, like, this rat's, like, massive... Massive and super hench. It doesn't seem like that he's, like, so hungry that he has to, like, risk his life by attacking a super ripped barbarian dude. But whatever.
Who knows?
His mistakes were made and he's paid for them now.
We'll never know what that rat was thinking.
Ah, oh, that's a shame. He was the real hero of the story.
Rest in peace. He told himself that as long as he still breathed the gust of life through his lungs, hope was not lost. He told himself this, but found it hard to comprehend in his gloomy surroundings. Yet he was still alive, his bulging sinews at their peak of marvel.
And like the Quickness just sitting there, it's like, man, things are shit, but I am still ripped. He just sort of, like, just starts flexing to himself. It's like, God damn, but these are still a marvel. Look at them.
His struggling mind floating in a mirage of impressed excellence of thought.
What the fuck?
What? Is it? Did I pronounce that right? Mirage? Mural?
No, I don't know. That's not a word I'm aware of.
Floating,
I think,
in
it's a typo.
A mural of impressed excellence of thought. Yep.
It's not a word.
What could that mean?
Marvel?
Floating in a... No.
Like, what... Okay, what does impress... What's it talk about? Impressed
so
excellence
he's struggling,
of thought.
So, his struggling mind floating in a... Mural of impressed excellence. Floating in a...
But what does it... What does it mean by impressed excellence of thought?
I think he's saying he's really smart.
But it's like... But his mind's struggling.
Yeah. Floating in a mural of impressed excellence of thought. I think what he's saying is that he's got a lot on his mind, and it's a struggle.
Yeah, like, I think he's, like, saying that his mind's sort of, like, going a mile a minute trying to think of ideas, and his mind's sort of, like, struggling to keep up with it all. But what the fuck is mural supposed to be?
Yeah, I can't work that one.
That's... I give in.
Yeah. But
dumb.
Then it hit him. Wait, I didn't finish that paragraph.
You didn't?
No. plot after plot sifted through his mind in energetic contemplations. Then it hit him. Minutes may have passed in silent thought or days. He could not tell.
But... Stop saying that, Grigner, for God's sake!
But he stumbled at last upon a plan that he considered as holding a slight margin of plausibility. He might die in the attempt, but he knew he would not submit without a final bloody struggle. It was not a foolproof plan, yet it built up a store of renewed vortexed energy in his overwrought soul. One word.
Nice.
Though he might perish in the execution of the escape, he would still be escaping the life of infinite torture in store for him. One word.
One word.
Either way, he would still cheat the gloating prince for the succored revenge his sadistic mind craved so dearly.
Like, seriously, he can commit suicide. That is an option for him.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong, I'd rather, like, make an escape attempt that might fail and get me killed rather than just kill myself. But I like the way he just thinks, it's like, there is no options whatsoever.
Well, he must be getting desperate.
I can't just not eat and die.
He must be getting desperate because earlier on he was saying that, like, all of his ideas would not have worked. So now he's, like...
But now he's had other ideas.
That might...
His mind was a mirror of impressed excellence of thought, Louis.
But how is this a good idea?
He might
die.
I mean, but I think he's saying that it also might work. His other plans just flat out wouldn't work.
What do you think they were? Like, I know, why don't I just, like, leave? wait.
Maybe he was going to, like... try and dress up as like a wench and try and lure the guards in.
Like suddenly just speaks like, in a high pitched voice, like
behold
like,
my litheness.
They're like
look into my deepest ovals.
What are you doing in there, wench? Wait a minute.
You're not a wench at
you're,
all.
You're a massive
you're
barbarian.
A barbarian. Your chest is hairy.
He could have worked together with the rat. Like,
yeah.
Next time they bring food or something, get the rat to, like, pounce them.
Yeah, he could just, like, throw the rat at them. I mean, again, we have to take into account, these are ideas that he rejected before trying. He realised that throwing the rat at them wouldn't actually help him get out. And that due to the fact he didn't have any razors, he couldn't pull off the gender bender plan. And only for that reason.
So here's his idea, I think. The guards would soon come to bear him of the prince's buried mind of... No.
Stop
that. That's bad. The guards would soon come to bear him off to the prince's buried minds of dread, giving him the sought-after opportunity to execute his newly formulated plan. Groping his way along the rough floor, Grigner finally found his tool... in a pool of congealed gore. His tool. What's he doing over there? Did the rat do a number on him? Yeah, found his tool in a pool of congealed gore, the carcass of the decapitated rodent, the tool that the very filth he had been sentenced to spawned. When the time came for action, he would have to be prepared, so he set himself to rending the sticky hulk in grim silence, searching by the touch of his fingertips for the lever to freedom. What? So what is the tool? The rat.
The dead rat.
So he is going to use the rat.
He is actually going to use the rat.
How?
You see?
How?
I think he's going to try and, like... fashion some kind of shiv out of his bones. That's the only thing I can think of that would actually be even vaguely sensible.
I guess so.
Because like he's like taking the rat apart. That's what he's saying at the end. He's like rending it down to like its constituent rat components. So I'm guessing the only thing that he'd actually get of worth out of that would be like the bones or something.
I like this rat. Serves a purpose even when he's dead.
Yeah, like, you see, all of that gratuitous gore and fighting wasn't for nothing. It's a Chekhov's rat. He's going to use it to escape the prison. But I like how his plan is still, he's going to jump the guards when they try and move him eventually. Like, this isn't a plan for him to, like, escape from the current cell. How has he not had that plan before, to try and overpower the guards when they try and move him? That's basically what his plan is. He's added, like, an extra asterisk to it, because he's now got the rat bones to use as a weapon.
Yeah, I would imagine the guards hopefully are, like, at least mildly armoured, you know. Otherwise, like, he is, you know, this massive barbarian who's a killing machine from what we've seen. You'd think mm-hmm. he would be able to at least give it a go, you know. But somehow this shiv is, like, made of rat bones.
Yeah, you'd expect the guards to expect Grigner to be, like, pretty frantic at this point. You'd kind of expect him to try something then.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they should not have their guard down when they're moving him.
Yeah.
Until they've got him out and then at sword point, like, tied his hands behind him or some shit yeah. like that.
And they're feeding him quite well. Like, they're, you know, keeping him not starving, basically.
Yeah, like, Grigner's saying that the food's shit, but he's also saying that he's got plenty to eat. Like earlier, it's like, I'm not even, like, as hungry as I normally am on a normal day, because I'm just sitting here in this cell.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, like, it's not like he should be wasted or anything yet. Like you say, like he's still got bulging sinews at their peak of marvel, after all.
Yeah, and he, like, absolutely fucking destroyed a rat.
Like, I mean, I wouldn't put that up there with, like, the feats of Hercules or something for strength, like being able to kill a rat with your bare hands.
And that's the end of chapter 4.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess that's a pretty straightforward one in what actually happened. Grigner was sitting there contemplating his fate some more, bitching about the food quality. Then, one day when trying to sleep, a rat jumped out and attacked him. He utterly wrecked it. That's like, you know, just, he, like, seemed to have literally pulled half of it out of his skin, like, by ripping its head off.
Yeah, like in a sort of, which is it? Mortal Kombat?
Yeah, Mortal Kombat, yeah, that's like style. Scorpion's fatality, to, like, rip someone's head off with, like, no, is that? Or is that Sub-Zero? I forget. It's been a long time since
I
played Mortal Kombat.
I want to see those characters in Mortal Kombat. Grigner and Rat.
Grigner.
Rat.
Fatality. Makes love well. Rat. Glazes over. Yeah, they'd fit in. You know, they've started like adding characters from other mediums to it. Like in a few years ago, they like added Freddy from like the Freddy Krueger film. So, you know, there's precedent. They could add Grigner.
Yeah, let's get that campaign started.
Grigner for Mortal Kombat 2017.
Oh, fuck Grigner, Rat.
Oh yeah, he's going to be top tier.
Like, it's literally just a rat, like a big one.
Yeah, like a pretty big rat.
But a rat.
Still just a rat.
Like, not a, like, you know, humanoid rat. Rat.
Just rat.
Rat.
Flat rat.
It's quite a nice cliffhanger to, I'm excited to see whether his plan pays off.
Yeah, like, because it can, oh, surely it can only work with the most incompetent and ill-equipped of guardsmen. Because, like,
and surely they're going to, I would have hoped that they sort of do rounds and check what's going on. But I guess he might be sneaky in his shiv crafting. But
I mean, like, it's like, I don't think they're, like, cleaning up in there or anything. And it's like a Stygian black pit in there. Like, you know, Grigner can hardly see. Like, he's saying that he's having to, like, take this rat apart by feel.
Yeah, and he has to, like, grope his way around the walls.
Yeah, so, like, he's not got, so, like, they're probably not going to be able to tell what the fuck he's doing in there.
Which makes, like, it even, like, more easy for him to pounce them or something when they bring the food and take the bowl or whatever. Yeah, he could just, hide in the well, everything's the shadows, by the sounds of it.
Yeah. I know, it sounded like the entrance to this is, like, high up. It's not just a door. But
so how are they going to... Yeah.
I guess they're going to be like, you, come out. And I guess Grigner will, because he wants to get out. And I'm guessing that pretty much anyone would, because they could just stop feeding him if he refused.
Yeah.
I mean, there's not really, you know, a win state to not getting out when they ask you to get out. But, yeah, like, but, you know, he's going to have to, like, I'm just wondering what kind of weapons he's fashioning out of rat bones, even, like, giant rat bones. You know, he's going to have, like, a sharp bone that he can, like, shove into someone's neck, maybe. That's about the only way I can imagine he can make a lethal weapon out of this.
Yeah.
And also, after talking about how he's in this blackness, it just occurred to me that once he leaves this place, he's going to be, like, fucking blind for, like, half an hour or something while his eyes gets used to not being in utter darkness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he is not going... You know, even if he is still, you know, in the peak of his excellence or whatever it was, their peak of marvel, you know, he has still just been sitting on his ass for an indeterminate amount of time, eating poor food, even if plentiful enough. And he's going to be blind and armed with rat bones. I don't see how he can hope to overcome guards unless they are just the worst. Which I'm sure they'll prove to be, because it seems like that kind of story.
I hope someone's looking after the horse he tied up when he went into the inn, like back in chapter two. That horse is just like, where
that,
you go?
That horse is so hungry and so bored. I wonder what that horse is doing now.
Someone probably took it.
Probably. I mean, it seemed like a sketchy kind of place that if someone left a horse out somewhere for like 2 days, they'd just be like, oh, just take this.
Or it's dead.
Horsey.
Still tied to the thing.
Yeah, just a horse carcass. I hope that he, so like, after Grigler didn't come back, he made his way off and he's like, I don't know, visiting casinos or something.
He's with the wenches.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's got his hoofs round like two wenches, sat at a bar somehow, like with a cigar.
That's both bizarre and anachronistic. Why does he have a cigar?
Why not?
Wait, why is he in a bar? He's a horse.
Horses shouldn't be in bars.
They should be in casinos.
Playing what? Blackjack? Or just like running around?
Just, you know, frolicking. You know, frolicking on like the
roulette table.
Yeah, the flock of the roulette table. Just doing horse things.
Crapping on the craps table.
That can interfere with your throw.
Yeah.
It's never fun when that happens.
Is that good luck? If a horse craps on your crap table? I mean, it's like very lucky in that, like, the same way as getting struck by lightning is lucky, is, you know, is a...
Yeah, it's uncommon.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if saying it's luck is correct. Yeah, and we're also waiting on that big cliffhanger of why did we go to that chamber? Why? What did that have to do with anything?
Except for introducing the
titular Eye of Argon.
Yep.
And the indifferent idol that it's fixed in.
The indifferent, I think, bulging it's idol. In. Yeah, it's the Cyclops's eye.
It's a cycloptic idol with the Eye of Argon. I mean, is this idol like, idol of Argon?
Well, or, what is argon? Do we know?
I don't know. Well, isn't argon an element? But I don't think that's what he's going for here.
No. Yeah, I think
that seems unlikely.
Well, if it's the Eye of Argon, I guess the idol is argon.
I guess so, but unless it's like that's just like the name of, unless that's just like the name of the jewel, like that jewel is like the Eye of Argon, like, you know, famous jewels in our universe get name.
Yeah, but if the jewel is, if it's placed in like as the eye of something, you'd think, oh, let's call that the Eye of Argon, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly makes more sense that thing's meant to be argon, that bulging, shaggy-lipped thing. I don't know why, but shaggy-lipped keeps coming to me. Just, I know it means that it has, like, a beard and a moustache or something, but it's just such a weird way to say it.
Yeah, not like shaggy face or, you know, lips.
Yeah.
Odd.
Curious. Like, it's the same problem as last time. Like, what do you even say? You know, there's still not much of a plot to speak of outside of just violence and weird things happening. And just incredibly over-described things.
Yeah. Chapter 6 was absolute. Not 6, what am I talking about? Chapter 4? That's the one we just read. Is it? Where am I?
Chapter 4. Just read chapter 4.
Chapter 4 was massive compared to the other chapters, and yet, like, he killed a rat.
Yeah, that's all that happened.
And the rest of it is describing how empty it is and how long he's been in there, and, you know, a lot of describing.
And how it's taken him an the indeterminate amount of time he's been in here to come up with the plan to attack the guards when they try and move him. And it's just occurred to you, like, how weird his, like, chapter balance is. Because I'm just, like, looking at sort of, like, how far down the page we've gone. And we're, like, you know, we're on chapter 4 out of... We've just finished chapter 4 out of 7, but we're less than halfway through, like, the document.
Yeah. Yeah. The next few chapters are quite long.
Yeah. Like, I hope we get more interactions. Like, I enjoyed the rat fight, but still nothing stands up to just, like, the entire interaction with the prince. That was just... That's still topping it for me so far.
Yeah. Well, hopefully something good will happen in the next episode. We'll be covering chapter 5 and 6.
Yep, that's the plan.
Leaving us with just 7 and 7.5, and also the lost ending. Ooh.
Mm. So, everyone, I think that'll do it for this week. Again, we've been reading chapters 3, 3.5, and 4. What was he thinking? Of The Eye of Argon by Jim Tess, and we'll be hopefully back with you shortly to continue this journey into the Stygian Abyss with our dear friend Grigner. See ya.
See ya.